You ready to check your feelings at the door?
Check it out. Check it out.
This is Am I Reister or Am I Wrong? We're bringing you facts and only the truth. Now, Am I Reister or Am I Wrong?
Today, Ben Simmons says that he has a mental health issue and that the 76ers, that he's not mentally ready to play yet. Yeah, right. We know what's going on here. College football targeting is front and center again. And listen, you have to understand the rules. Rule number one of college football and football in general is bad things happen to good people. The NBA 75, that list came out. Who got snubbed and who are we throwing off the list and who are we putting back on the list? For cancel or consequence, Alec Baldwin has a tragic accident happen on the set of his movie. What should happen to the movie from this point on? And for the best of social media, are hot dog sandwiches? Ralph doesn't think so. I know that they are. And many, many more things. I'm George Reister. He's Ralph Amsden. And this is Reister or Wrong, the intersection where sports, business, society, and pop culture meet the truth. Absolute fire on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Facts only. Make sure you check your feelings at the door because no BS is allowed. We keep it 100. So I guess we'll start today with the Ben Simmons situation, Ralph, because we found out that obviously he got kicked out of practice a couple days ago. He got suspended for the game. They're trying to take his money, all of this stuff. And then Ben Simmons came out and said that he spoke to Doc Rivers, Joel Embiid, and the entire team and accepted everyone's need to take responsibility, including himself. But Ben Simmons informed them all that he's not mentally ready to play yet and needs time. So he's pulling a Kyrie Irving. Yesterday he said his back hurt. Ralph, first thing is, do you believe him?
Of course not. Because if he was traded to, let's say, Atlanta, some random trade-up that's never going to happen. Let's say that Atlanta packages John Collins, a couple of first-round picks, and ships them to Brooklyn, and then Brooklyn adds Isaiah Thomas or something like that to give them some scoring off the bench at point guard. Or not Brooklyn, Philadelphia. So let's say that happens. He'll be ready to play tomorrow. So if he'll be ready to play tomorrow, depending on the environment being different, then it's not an internal issue, it's an external issue. So he's not telling the truth. And I think the plan is just to make this such a toxic situation that Philadelphia has no choice but to act.
Okay, but what do you think about this? Because last year we had this with James Harden, except for James Harden just showed up and half-assed it, right? Which I hated. I thought it was gross.
I lost a lot of respect for James Harden, and you know he's one of my absolute all-time favorite players to watch.
Yeah, because the thing I didn't like about it, because there were people who were like, yo, that's the only way he could get out, blah, blah, blah. And the thing that didn't sit well with me was, all right, so I understand he wanted out, but Hooper's hoop. Like, the idea that you would go out there and not give your best intentionally because you're pouting, that just was so gross to me. I just don't understand it. Like, I could never, under any circumstances, see Kobe Bryant, even Kevin Durant, his own teammate. Like, imagine Kevin Durant being unhappy in a situation and then half-assing it in a basketball game. He would rather die than do that.
Kevin Durant was unhappy in two different situations. He balled out and then he moved on when it was all said and done. We have two examples of this. He was frustrated with Westbrook. He hated that they let the 3-1 lead slip away to Golden State. He wanted to win titles, so he moved on. He had trouble with Draymond. He was already mentally ready to go do something else in his last series with the Warriors. We saw what happened when he actually overextended himself, ended up having to miss an entire season of basketball due to a torn Achilles. So, and all that guy does is work hard. There's been plenty of people who were dissatisfied, but still balled out on the court. It is pretty common in the NBA, actually, to grow discontent with your situation with the management. I grew up a Suns fan. Barkley forced his way out of both Philadelphia and Phoenix, but when he was on the court, it was still all business. Kobe did everything he could to get traded, and the Lakers waited him out, and he still gave full effort every time he was on the court for Los Angeles. In fact, one of Kobe's ways of making it toxic was to just play so much harder than everybody else that they would want to get rid of him. Yes. Obviously, Ben Simmons doesn't have that in him. He's going the make everybody else, like, make your misery contagious route. And I think it could ultimately end up affecting the Sixers that are on the court. I don't know if this team has the ability to galvanize around the fact that, like, we got a cancer in the locker room, but he's not part of what we're doing. Let's close ranks and do our thing. I don't think the media in Philadelphia, I don't like the fans are going to let them forget that this is a part of the narrative of the season. Ben Simmons just wants a different situation. He's going to do whatever it takes. I don't fault him for doing what he thinks will get the job done, but yeah. I do judge him on his actions. Right? Yeah, like I understand his process, but I don't respect it.
Okay, so then the question is, see, because there's an aspect of this that kind of gets kind of tricky, right? Because his mental health, because yesterday he said his back was sore, and now he's talking about he's not mentally ready and all of that stuff. And mental health is a buzzword in the community. And nobody believes that something is actually wrong with him, right? And now that creates a two-way street, because you can't question somebody's mental health. Because if something were to happen, then you end up with egg on your face and they end up in a bad situation. But being that nobody really believes him, I think it's kind of gross that he would take this route. Because, like, when there are so many people who do have legitimate mental health issues in the world of sports, and now he's taking the easy road, I don't like it. It feels gross.
Yeah, and at the same time, I think it literally is a mental health issue. Like, having the inability to overcome adversity is on the spectrum of mental health issues. Being overly coddled and overly spoiled and having it impact your ability to relate to others is a mental and emotional health issue. All of these things actually fall on the spectrum of mental health, but there are things that are within his purview to seek help for, from whether it's athletic psychologists, team resources, having a better circle of people around him, just personal growth. Like, there's books out there, read one. Like, there's a lot of things that he can do to get over some of the things that are contributing to him being a toxic element on a competitive basketball team. The idea that he thinks that he's going to go somewhere else, and the external health of that organization and situation, and that fresh start and new start is going to do something for him, is very naive. It's like,
because he thinks that it's going to follow, that he doesn't realize that this is going to follow him. That the fans that are watching this from wherever his next team is, they're like, oh, okay, I see this. But then they're going to get him, and they're going to be like, okay, cool, yeah, we got him. But first sign of adversity. First sign of adversity, the fan base will turn on him. Turn on him quick.
Every fan base is going to, like, they sense a weakness in him. It's not just going to be Philadelphia. He's going to get chided in every single arena that he goes to, because a lot of this is generational. He's offended the sensibilities of all of the people out there who think that athletes are rich and spoiled anyway. This is the first time I really feel like we've seen one act that way. We project onto athletes all of the time. It's just part of society and what we do and our own economic hangups and everything like that. But this is actually the case of somebody who is a good player on a successful team who wants out for no reason other than he is personally uncomfortable and personally unhappy. You can blame 76ers organization all you want. I see people trying to pit this as like, oh, why are you guys out there siding with billionaires over Ben Simmons? I don't think the issue is Ben Simmons versus billionaire. I think the issue is Ben Simmons versus the reality of the situation. And I think that most NBA fans are smart enough to look at that and say, we would not want this guy in our locker room. Yeah. Ben Simmons thinks that he's the kind of rotten banana that you can make banana bread with, but he's not. He's the kind that spoils the rest of the bananas. Right? Like, that's the situation that we're in with Ben Simmons.
So, see, some of this, I do believe, is the 76ers' fault. Like, the way that they talked about him after the playoff game, it was knee-jerk. You know, it's one of those, like, when you get a microphone stuck in your face and all of this. You know what I mean?
What are you supposed to do? Like, what are you supposed to do? He has not improved as a shooter. His attitude has not improved. He's become timid in situations. He is a non-factor offensively, and that puts you in a situation where all the scrutiny is on you as a playoff team. This is my least favorite thing about sports, is especially being a Suns fan, is the fact that, like, when teams make the playoffs, instead of celebrating them, all 32 NBA communities come together to put extra scrutiny on the teams that lose in the playoffs and say, here's why they're not the best, here's why they haven't made it. So you'll have the team that just missed the playoffs completely avoid anybody talking about them, while a team takes three different teams to seven games, then loses, and then all we want to talk about is what they're missing and what can't get them over the hump. That's just the culture we live in. It's very stupid. But at the same time, if Philadelphia wants to be a championship team, they're going to need offensive production out of their point guard position, and they're going to need the one other thing that most successful point guards have always brought to an NBA team, and that's leadership. He does neither.
Yeah. Listen, bro. So, and then Daryl Morey, their general manager, came out and was like, yo, this may take a long time. It could take years. This is the first time that we've actually seen a team that I don't think is willing to blink, that they want Ben Simmons back. First thing, I do believe they want him back, but if they're going to trade him, they're not just going to give him away for cheap or less than. So over under, actually, what is your gauge of when do you think that this will be resolved one way or the other?
Within 3 weeks. It's just not sustainable. And shout out to Daryl Morey for coming a long way to being like, free Taiwan, to then holding one of his own players hostage. Ben Simmons is Taiwan right now. The fact of the matter is that, like, he has tanked his own trade value, and they have assisted in tanking his trade value so much that they have to bring their standard down. I hate when teams give up on an NBA player for like a package of nothing, the way that the Rockets, I feel, did with James Harden, and the way that the Thunder have seemed to treat the entire franchise, which is just to collect picks that you don't know if they're going to turn out or not. But at this point, you got to get somebody back who can contribute immediately, because you are a title contender right now, even without Ben Simmons. And the other thing that you have to do is send him to Siberia if you have to.
Send him to Sacramento. Send him to Sacramento and see.
Yeah, get Marvin. Marvin Bagley is doing nothing right now. They won't even play him because a level of toxicity that Ben Simmons has spread to the Philadelphia 76ers locker room is what Marvin Bagley III's dad has done over in Sacramento. And I'm not saying it would be a good, like, one-for-one swap, because of course it wouldn't. But you're in a position right now where if you can put together a couple of pieces, if you're Sacramento, to bring in Ben Simmons, considering you're getting nothing from Marvin Bagley III.
They're going to have to give Halliburton too. Like, it would be like Halliburton and Bagley, because they don't want Bagley. So,
and he's okay. Like, he is okay. And you know, I'm going to the ends of the earth to defend Arizona kid. But like,
Thank you for saying that. I appreciate you and the honesty, because whenever I say that, you're like, no, no way. But I appreciate
it. That's not true. That's definitely not true. That you brought it up in an inappropriate situation off air. We had a fight about it. But no, like, when it comes to Marvin Bagley, let's be honest. This is a 16-10 guy from the power forward position. And I think that you can work with that. I think you got to find a way to start him, like, coming off the bench.
And he's broken too. and he's broken too. Like, he's broken like Ben Simmons is broken right now. I think that his lack of success in the league has come from more situation than it's been more nurture than nature. Like, I think,
yeah. Sacramento's not the best environment. And then to be the number two overall pick with Luka and Trey being drafted behind you, and then
the expectations are stupid. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
They never started him. They never planned for him to be a star there. They just said, this guy can't really play defense, but he's very good on offense. Let's get the boost of him coming off the bench. That's not going to work.
Yeah.
He needs, you're making him into Marquise Chris when he's much more talented.
Yep. Well, on to the college football world. So yesterday there was a play that just illustrated what is wrong in college football right now with the targeting rules and the way the game is officiated, because people, like, we get so squeamish at watching sports. We're like, oh my God, that's, throw him out of the game. He hit somebody too hard. Bro, it's football. Rule number one about football is this. It's the first thing that you have to understand before you play, before your kid plays, before somebody that you know plays, and you have to accept this rule. Rule number one is that every time somebody gets hit, it's not a foul. It is not a penalty. It doesn't mean that they did something wrong. Bad things happen to good people in sports. It, not even just football. Bad things happen to good people. You're playing a physical game. And so here is what happened that I know when people, I saw it when I was watching the game, and people at home were like, oh my God, throw him out, kick him out forever. But this was a legal hit. This was teaching tape. This was an excellent hit. The kid did what he was supposed to do.
All right, we are replaying this hit on Michael Pratt. It was called targeting. Matt Austin, our rules official, is with us. Matt, walk us through everything you're seeing here.
Okay, the ruling on the field, or the call on the field, was a late hit with targeting. So there's nothing the officials can do with the late hit. That has to stand. I don't think this is targeting.
That's not even the play I thought you were going to show. I thought you were going to show the way the UNLV game ended.
Oh, yeah, that was bad,
too. Quarterback getting blown up. Because that, to me, that was a launch. That was head down. This was not a launch. This was not head down. This was head to the side. This was hit with the shoulder. He began the attempt to make contact before the quarterback had any intent of sliding or showed any intent of sliding. This is a good hit, and this is why you don't venture out into the land of the beasts if you're a quarterback.
Yeah, you are a quarterback. You are a runner. Get down early. How many times have we seen quarterbacks get their shit wrecked because they decide, ooh, I'm going to get an extra 2 yards here and slide? Bruh, you better take the Kyler Murray, I'll slide 10 yards before anybody is close to me after I got the first down, because that happens.
And when you do stuff like that, when you start to protect yourself as a quarterback, you will get refs who are more protective of you. Last weekend, Kyler Murray, for the very first time, got gently pushed in the back after he released the ball. It caused him to take 2 steps toward the sideline. He didn't even show any impact, and they threw a 15-yard penalty. And that's because Kyler Murray is the type of quarterback who goes to great lengths to protect himself. And when refs see that, they're a little bit more wary of, like, oh, if this guy actually takes a hit, that was a terrible call.
So they're going to
he had nothing on his mind other than yards. He could have braced for impact for that hit. He could have put a stop on. But he went with the slide way late, and he got his clock cleaned. Like, this is football. This is what's going to happen. The goal of these rules should be to protect quarterbacks, but you can't protect quarterbacks from themselves.
Correct. And then, but the whole idea that the onus is on the defender makes no sense to me, because this is like cognitive negligence. What did you do to contribute to your own demise?
Right.
And this quarterback did a lot to contribute to his own misfortune. He did. He put himself in harm's way. This is just like when I was younger, I used to hang out with a different crowd. Like people who go to jail, get arrested, sell drugs, all of this stuff. That would be who I would be around. Now, but I understood in that situation that I could, that something could go wrong. You know what I mean? Like I understood that. And did that mean that I had to be doing something wrong? No. But I understood that if I was around the wrong element, that these things come associated with that. Same thing here. You're playing football. If you do not take great lengths to take care of yourself, like you said with Kyler Murray, they won't protect you. For instance, Lamar Jackson probably, and Cam Newton even. Cam Newton took way more hits than they would allow normal quarterbacks to take. Because Cam Newton would run people over. You didn't know when he was going to be down. Like, it put the refs in a very sticky situation. Lamar Jackson, he slides all the time. He doesn't try to run people over. So it's a little bit different. Russell Wilson runs, but you ain't putting your hands on Russell Wilson because he doesn't take hits. Like, he doesn't fight for first downs. Josh Allen, he puts himself in more danger, so he probably gets hit and doesn't get as many calls as other guys would too. So you are 100% right about that. But
is there one thing the defender could have done different? Is that instinct that when you see a quarterback or a punter or a kicker on the run that you want to run through him instead of wrap up? Is that something that could have been non-penalized?
I actually think that was a better solution for him than trying to wrap him up, because had he tried to wrap him up, his head would have been inevitably creeped up to the kid's head, and then they would have been like, oh, it's targeting. His head slipped up and hit him in the chin. Bro, this is football.
If that was a running back running up the seam like that, would you have lowered your shoulder to go in on him? Or would you have gone at the legs or what? Are the refs trying to tell defenders, treat the quarterback like they're any other runner, but then yes. You know that's not the case, because then if they went low, you could get that call.
Yeah,
the
but they don't slide really though. Like regular people don't slide. Right. Like they would have gone head first, which would have been a normal collision. But he decided that, I mean, and he was running straight up, bro. Listen, and it sucks that the kid got hurt. But if somebody hit my kid like that, I'm not going to be mad at the kid. I'm going to be mad at my kid.
You get, because you put yourself in danger.
Yeah.
You put yourself in danger because you get, the flag doesn't take the impact away. The flag doesn't take anything that happened away. It doesn't go back in time and erase the trauma.
Yep.
So you still are hurt, and regardless of whether the ref says, oh, that's on the other team, it's still on you. You still feel the impact of what you did.
No, you are 100% right, bro. 100% right. All right, now college football this weekend, though, there are a lot of really big games. One of them I'm going to, which is the biggest game of the weekend probably, is Oregon, UCLA. I am excited about this game. I'm going to this game, but I am deciding whether I'm going to go to college football game day. So Ralph, should I go to game day at 6 a.m. in the morning on UCLA's campus and then trek all the way to the Rose Bowl after that?
If you can scoop Bill Walton for like a 10-minute interview, it's worth your time. I just went to game day and it's all right. I mean, it's kind of sequestered off, so you can't really like. So unless you're going to hold up a sign or be part of the festivities, it's better to just be watching game day on television. And then on the West Coast, holy crap, you got to be there at 6 in the morning instead of 8:30. You know, like I would out here in Charlotte. So I don't know. I don't think it's worth it unless you can find a way, because I know Bill Walton's going to be there. So
yeah,
if you can find a way to get at that dude. Maybe not, because I have some stuff to say about him later in this podcast that might not make it so friendly.
Yikes. All right. The rest of the weekend, though, there are some games that are going to have some college football playoff implications that obviously that Oregon UCLA game does, even though Ralph doesn't think so. And because he talked about that at our Pac-12 podcast, Oregon doesn't have a shot at the playoff. Get out of here.
No, Oregon UCLA absolutely has a college football playoff implication. It's important for Ohio State.
I'll fight. If you were closer, I would fight you. All right. The next game that is very important is I have circled this Northwestern Michigan game as a game that is like Michigan is a 23.5 point favorite, but Northwestern, they find a way to play well at times when you don't think that they should. And I know that they just got beat by Nebraska 56-7 2 weeks ago, but Pat Fitzgerald, his teams find a way to play well. And Michigan plays a style of offense when they run the ball and can't throw it that will lend itself to them playing an unusually close game. And this could be it.
I did notice on our Fearless Friday picks this week, you went heavy on road dogs. All five of your picks are road underdogs.
Yep.
I don't know if I've ever seen that before.
Yep. And that's one of them. I have Northwestern because I think that this, I think 23.5 is too much for this game. And this game could turn into an upset. I'm telling you. Like, it's got all the makings of a potential upset because this is a trap game. Players are going to be overlooking them because of what Nebraska did to them. And the players are going to be up. That has big time implications. Another game that was wild, the line to me. So the Oregon line was weird to me because it started out Oregon was favored by 3.5 points, I think. And then it swung all the way to UCLA for 2.5 points. And then it went back to, and now it's a point for UCLA. Now, the same thing in this line. Oklahoma State is playing at Iowa State. Oklahoma State is ranked number eight in the country. Iowa State is not ranked. They're 4-2. They lost to Iowa and Baylor, both of whom who are ranked and well thought of. So, and they are 7-point favorites over Oklahoma State this week. That's wild.
That's tempting. I got bit though, taking Baylor plus 6.5. Was it? No, Kansas State. I got bit taking Kansas State plus 6.5 at Iowa State because I thought that they were having a down year. And then they came out and had a fairly dominant performance. And so now this is a game that's really making me think twice because I watched what Oklahoma State did in the fourth quarter against Texas. But a lot of teams are doing that against Oklahoma late in the game. I don't think Iowa State's that kind of team. I think they're very, very disciplined. So if Brock Purdy, who is the ultimate game manager, if Brock Purdy can keep them in that game and keep it close, I think that you still have a pretty good chance because it's a plus 7, but who knows? Maybe is it Hall, their running back? Is his name Bryce Hall? Yeah. Oh my gosh. Bryce Hall. Yeah. If he gets going, then who knows? Yeah. But I got bit on this last week, so I couldn't follow you down that one.
All right, and the last one I wanted to talk about, LSU at Ole Miss. Ole Miss is ranked number 12. The line on this game, Ole Miss is favored by 8 points. And I know I shouldn't judge last week because Florida is severely overrated. I've been telling everybody this. Florida fans have been real quiet in my mentions, Ralph. Real quiet. They were talking a lot. Oh, Georgia, top 25 is absolutely nonsense. Can't believe you don't have Florida ranked in the beginning of the season. I was like, beat somebody and I'll rank you. And then they're like, we just lost to Alabama by 2 points. Like, bro, nobody cares. Nobody cares about your one close loss when you haven't beaten anybody. Nobody, dude. And yeah, so they're upset, but guess what? They'll be okay. And
so this was Ole Miss was favored by 9.5. You say it's gone down to 8 right now?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you and I both got in at 9.5, I think.
Yes.
So we're good. I'm with you 100% on this. I think that 9.5 is Ole Miss by 2 scores. Like, I don't know.
And I think that having a solution to the Ed Orgeron situation is going to help this team out. They're going to come out, play well, just like they did against Florida, and this could be an upset. Now on to the topic that Ralph has been chomping at the bit, or is it champing at the bit? Champing at the bit. Is the NBA 75 list. The NBA 75 list has caused more division than, you know, like it's been the most divisive thing over the last few days because they put it out and the list has included, obviously, there are going to be players that we all know, you know, the Michael Jordans of the world, the Kareem Abdul-Jabbars, the, you know, all the marquee names, Shaq, Kobe, Oscar Robertson, David Robinson, John Stockton. You knew these, Dirk Nowitzki. You knew that these guys were going to be on the list.
This is a good list. It's a good list overall.
Okay, so, and on every list there are snubs. And you had Reggie Miller say that he didn't think that he was even going to be on this list. So, and the last time that they did it was 25 years ago when it was the NBA 50. So now, who do you have a problem with on this list and who should be replaced?
Well, I got a couple of problems. First of all, my first thing that I want to get out there and make really clear, I don't ever want to hear anything from Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, or Ray Allen ever again about how they were slept on or that the Miami Heat built a super team. You know who doesn't have three players on the NBA top 75? The early iteration of that Miami Heat team. Now, they did get Ray Allen. He was a bench player. He made a really big shot for them, of course. But prime Ray Allen, prime Kevin Garnett, and prime Paul Pierce won a total of one title in Boston, and they're all on this list. I never want to hear anything from those three ever again about they are officially, because of this list, the Atlanta Braves of the NBA. All that talent, all that success, you got one title out of it. Mm. Chris Bosh isn't on this list. Mm. So I don't want to hear anything about the Heat being better than the Celtics. It's just...
That is a hell of a point because they're all, you are right. They always cry. We're slept on. They don't act like we, they don't give us the credit. And then you think about what Draymond, they don't love you like that, Paul Pierce. Apparently they do. Somebody does. Because there was a glaring, I would throw Paul Pierce off this list for, and there was another player I would throw off this list. And it's not because he's not a good player, because he plays for my team. That is Anthony Davis. And you know, the reason why I would throw him off this list is because of what he did prior to coming to the Lakers in terms of not having any playoff success. And I would replace him with Dwight Howard. And for some reason, he's the dude that's consistently slept on. We're talking about a guy who's an NBA champion now, 8-time All-Star, 5-time first team All-NBA, a second team 2/3, 3-time defensive player of the year in consecutive years, 4-time defensive all first team, a second team all rookie team, 5-time rebounding leader, 2-time block leader. I mean, come on, like, what are we doing here? Like, the fact that he's not on this list and Anthony Davis is criminal.
I agree with you, Dwight Howard over... I agree with you on Dwight Howard over Anthony Davis. I don't think that Anthony Davis should be on this list yet.
No, if you're going to put Anthony Davis on this list, Klay Thompson should be on this list.
Well, Klay Thompson probably should be on this list. And I'll tell you exactly who I feel like he should...
He's a better shooter than Ray Allen. Let's be honest.
But Ray Allen bridges the gap.
Just as many big shots. I'm just saying. And he's made just as many big shots. He's game six Clay.
Right. I would say that Ray Allen, for me, is one of the last on that I would definitely leave on because he's the bridge between Reggie Miller and what the NBA is today. Like, he took the NBA from the Reggie Miller era, where the best three-point shooter in the league would maybe make one and a half threes a game, to somebody who was putting in 3 to 4 on a regular basis, scoring 25 points a game, and then evolved. And he's got 2 championships as well. So I do feel like Ray Allen belongs. But here are a couple of switches that I would make right off the bat. Number one, 2 people that need kicked off the list immediately are Pete Maravich and Bill Walton. You cannot have
Bill Walton should be players. On a college list.
Well, Bill Walton is one of the top 5 greatest college basketball players
Correct.
Of all time.
It's Period. Him and Lou Alcindor. Like
he had an MVP season. I think he won a title in Portland, then it had an MVP season right after that, where he averaged 18 and 15. Then his career pretty much ended. He was an injury riddled bench option for a long, and that's not to say that he was a bad basketball player. He's an incredible basketball player, but his resume is not better than Yao Ming's. His resume is not better than Dikembe Mutombo's. Like, Bill Walton does not belong
on
the
list. You can throw him off and put T-Mac on too. Tracy McGrady, one of the 10 greatest scorers in NBA history.
Right, but if you're going to throw T-Mac on, then we're going to have a huge fight about whether you'd put Alex English on. Because the whole thing about Alex English and why people wouldn't have
bucket.
Him. Yeah, he was a bucket. Yeah, not only was he a bucket, he had 8 straight years of averaging 25 points or more. T-Mac had 7, but 2 of those were over 30. I think maybe only one of Alex English's was over 30. But Alex English, for all the people who said that he was just a bucket and didn't do anything in the playoffs, he actually got to the second round a few times.
Yeah.
T-Mac never did. And so I think it's a coin flip for me between Alex English and T-Mac. We got to get rid of Pete Maravich because he was a very influential basketball player. But his time in the NBA, like he won an NBA championship in his last year when he was getting 9 minutes a game. Other than that, he never even won a playoff series. He was very, very exciting. But why him over Tony Parker? Why him over 4-time NBA champion Tony Parker? I don't understand. And so I think there are certain guys that are on this list, like Lenny Wilkins and Bill Sharman, who maybe you could make an argument should be arguable, but they did so much winning peripherally. Like they won on the court and then they won as coaches. And then Bill Sharman won a bunch as executives, which brings me to my other point. All these people that are clowning all the old time NBA basketball players because they wouldn't be able to play in today's NBA. That's not what we're talking about here. That's not the subject at hand. That is smooth brain thinking. That is no wrinkles up here, just smooth brain. If you can't see that the NBA existed for a very long time without KD in it and that everything scaffolded off of the people who were doing it in the early days, I saw somebody out there disrespecting Bob Pettit. Bob Pettit is like a top 15 player ever. Bob Pettit, if Bill Russell didn't exist, Bob Pettit would have like 20 titles.
Here's the truth, Ralph, is that people don't think about the fact of this, right? So you look at a guy like Pete Maravich, you look at a Bob Pettit, you look at a Bill Russell, and they're like, oh my God, look at him. John Havlicek dribbling the ball like this. Here's the reality is this, and here's the truth. Those players created moves, created, and mind you, the rules were much more cumbersome. There was no 3-point line. You couldn't do certain things because they wouldn't allow it. They were like, yo, everybody can't do it, so we're breaking the rules and all this. So is that if those players were given the same opportunity to see themselves play 20, 30, 40 years later, they would be doing the exact same thing that the guys are now because they would be training differently. They would know 50 moves when they're 10 instead of inventing moves.
You have to accept the idea that some people just came first.
Yeah. And there people was no step back. If you tried to do a step back then, they would have called a travel. Like they would have like all of these side steps, crossover, Allen Iverson, like you can't do Allen Iverson's crossover in the league now because they'll call it a travel. But it's evolved. The game has evolved. And if Magic Johnson had gotten a chance to train with or those players back then got a chance to train the way Kyrie Irving and Steph Curry do now, their handles would have been way smoother too.
Yeah, no, Magic, like Giannis to me is what Magic would look like if he was right now. Like, could just do literally everything that there is to do. And I love that. But you just think about it. Like, oh, so you live in the Western United States. Guess what? You are on the backs of people who were probably wagon pioneers. And that's why they have towns named after them. And if you get mad because you get rich in the Bay Area, you create way more jobs than, you know, anybody who your small town was named after ever would. It doesn't matter. They were there first because they were the pioneer. You got to be born into that situation, which allowed you to do what you're going to do. If you can't think in a linear fashion like that, then you just need to get out of the entire debate altogether. Like, we can talk about whether or not Damian Lillard, a volume scorer who hasn't won a title because of where he's at, belongs in over Alex English, or Tracy McGrady or something like that. That's a debate that we can have,
yeah,
because they're similar eras and they did similar things.
Yep.
But if you say like, oh, Bob McAdoo and Dave DeBuscher, who by the way, were the two biggest snubs from the NBA top 50 when they dropped this 25 years ago, then it just, you don't know. Like, you don't know what they did to get basketball where it is now. It doesn't matter if they couldn't compete on the court right now. Guess what? Your college football team's graphic design guy is 10 times the artist that Leonardo da Vinci ever was. But guess whose paintings are priceless? Right? Like, it, that's just the way it is. You have to accept that. So anybody who is saying like, oh, well, Bill Sherman would literally not even get off the bench for the worst team in D3 in college basketball. Basketball is where it is because of guys like Bill Sherman and Jerry West and stuff like that. So that whole thing just really ticks me off. But I will say the people that there's four that I would remove from the list for sure. Anthony Davis is one. Damian Lillard is very arguable, but I feel like he is one as well. And then Bill Walton and Pete Maravich, God bless them, probably both top 10, top 15 NCAA players all time. But I don't understand what their standing is as far as NBA greatness when you have some of the guys that you left off. It just doesn't make sense to me, especially Klay Thompson, who has three titles, Tony Parker, who has four. I think winning should matter.
Yep. No, I can't debate that. You were 100% right.
Do we need to cancel, or is there a justified consequence? Let's find out now.
Now, it is time for cancel or consequence, where we tell you whether somebody's being canceled out in the world or they are receiving consequences for things that have happened or that they did. So today's person is Alec Baldwin. So Alec Baldwin is directing and starring in a movie that's filming in New Mexico, and they had a prop gun situation. Prop gun goes off, probably like it's supposed to, and it accidentally kills the director of photography and then injures another person who went to the hospital, and he was okay, but the lady died. And the question was, people thought that the movie should be shut down, shouldn't come out. All of this, where do you stand?
Well, obviously, like, it's got to be thoroughly investigated. You got to figure out why something like this would happen on a movie set. I saw Paul Scheer knew the woman. I think was her name Heather, the director of cinematography and photography. She passed away, and obviously, like, you know, I think that you probably have to leave some of that to what her family's wishes would be, whether they want to see her, because a lot of this is her work. Do they want to see her work completed, or is the completion of the process too painful? Would Alec Baldwin even want to be involved in something like this? The other guy that got shot is the actual director of the film.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what
do you do there? Yeah, her name is Helena Hutchins.
Helena Hutchins. Yeah, man. I don't know. I think ultimately, if everybody was to be on the same page that they, after a thorough investigation and, you know, the director is healthy enough to work, if they would even want to, if that would be something, because if an actor dies on a film set and most of their scenes are shot, then the idea is like most of them, most people would want to see that come out because it represents the last work, like the movie. Chadwick Boseman.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Chadwick Boseman. Same thing with Paul Walker, with
Carrie Fisher in the Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they've had stuff filmed with her that came out long after she passed away. But this obviously is not an on-screen person, but it's a person responsible for what you're seeing on screen. Would their family want to see that produced?
See, now here is where the majority of things in life usually come back to the money. I always err on trying to do the right thing over the money, right? And obviously, I would have a conversation with their family, right? But before we even get back to filming, we got to make sure that everybody on our set is okay, mentally and emotionally.
Yeah, how are you going to go back to that movie set with a Western movie set with guns and act those scenes out?
Yeah, it's probably going to make for a very that much more emotional of a movie, and it may make the movie better ultimately, depending on how far they are and how much is in the can already. But man, this is a situation to where there's a lot of people who are going to debate and argue about set rules and all of this, which there may have needed to be some more. I mean, we don't know at this point, but this is an absolute tragedy. And I think you pause filming of the movie until everybody is in good shape to be able to do it. And then you resume it.
You see people who don't like Alec Baldwin, which there's plenty of reasons to not like Alec Baldwin, but you see people who don't like Alec Baldwin are like laughing about this and applauding it.
Bro, they're gross and they need to be actually canceled. And no, actually they would be receiving consequences. So it's gross when people use, you know, tragedy to try to further whatever their agenda is or belief about a person. So yeah.
Now, here's the best of social media.
Now, it is time for the best of social media, where we literally show you guys the best things from social media. The first thing up today was a debate about what a hot dog is, because it came out on the on one of the Unafraid shows Twitter accounts. Is a hot dog a sandwich? Ralph, a hot dog is absolutely a sandwich. There is meat, there is bread, and mind you, you can actually make a sandwich without meat, but I prefer not to have those. So you can put condiments on it. So you put condiments on it, mayo, mustard, hollandaise, whatever accoutrement that you want on your hot dog. You can put vegetables on there, lettuce, onions, pickles, whatever you want on there. It satisfies, and you eat it with your hands. It satisfies every single criteria that there is for a sandwich, just like a gyro and just like a pita.
Okay. I've never actually, you said that I don't think a hot dog's a sandwich. I've never actually cared enough to weigh into this debate, but let's prosecute it, right? Let's get into it. A hot dog is the meat, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So you could eat a hot dog without the bread?
Yes.
So then a hot dog is not always a sandwich, because you could just eat hot dogs. You could roast them on a fire and eat them.
Yeah, and so you can do that with turkey and ham and shawarma and whatever else that you put on it too. It becomes a sandwich when you put it in the bread.
So if you eat just the bread with some lettuce in it, just a hot dog bun with some lettuce in it, is that a sandwich?
Yes.
So then the sandwich isn't the hot dog, the sandwich is the bun.
No.
You're saying a sandwich is anything with bread.
No. Anything with a bread is not there. Well, that if you put something in bread, right? Whether it's two pieces, if it can, and it can even be open face, but I don't consider open face sandwiches, but That's a whole nother thing. If you put bread, right? Some bread. Sort of okay. bread, whether it's a pita, you know what I mean? Whatever it is. Even if you take two crackers and put meat and cheese in, it is now a sandwich. A hot dog, when you put the meat in the bun, if you put anything inside of a bun, a hamburger is a sandwich. Like, all of these things are sandwiches. It follows the okay. criteria of having bread and something in the middle. If you put chili in a hot dog bun, which I've done when I didn't have hot dogs and I was broke, that is still a sandwich. Doing what my grandmother used to give me in the mornings for breakfast sometimes. Bacon, mayo in a bun or on bread is a sandwich.
Okay. But the issue is what your criteria create. Well, first of all, the hot dog thing is the hot dog can exist on its own. So if the hot dog can exist on its own, then whether a hot dog's a sandwich or not depends on how you eat it, right? So correct. The other thing is you said it could be a cracker with two ingredients in between. So an Oreo cookie is a sandwich.
It's a cookie sandwich.
Okay. You said that bread with anything in it is a sandwich.
Pretty right? much, yeah.
Okay. So a Boston cream donut.
No, it's a donut, Ralph. A donut is not.
Donut is bread.
You know what? How many times do we see on these weirdo BuzzFeed or Tastely that they'll make a hot dog and I mean they'll make a hamburger or something and put it on a donut. They'll cut a donut in half or use two donuts. So yes, a donut can be used to make a sandwich.
But like a Boston cream. Or like a filled cronut, you slice it, and then you put the frosting inside it, and you sandwich it. Those are sandwiches?
I don't even know what you're talking about right now.
You're saying anything with bread and something in it. I'm just trying to figure out the criteria. So then here's the other issue. If you're in the office, and you're going to get lunch, and you say, like, hey, what do you guys want me to pick up for lunch for the office? And everyone in the office says sandwiches, that person going out to get hot dogs would be a mistake. Because that's not going to be the expectation of everybody who said sandwiches. And then you're going to come back in and be like, it's a sandwich. Also soft tacos, according to you, sandwich.
No, because it falls into the Mexican category. A torta is a Mexican sandwich. If you don't make sandwiches with tortillas, a soft taco is really just a burrito. How about that?
Well, everything is a burrito, but that's an argument for another time. All right, last one. Is a pizza a sandwich?
Nope. It's dough. It's different. It's like flatbread. It's got its own
what? What was that second word? Flat what?
Flatbread.
All right, so I'm gonna fold a pizza in half, call it a calzone. Is it a sandwich?
No, a
that's
calzone
bread. That's bread on both sides. That's bread on both sides with ingredients in it.
A
same
calzone is not a sandwich. Dog. And the reason why how do you eat a calzone?
It depends. You pick it up and eat it. You can eat it with a fork.
Nobody ever picks up a calzone and eats it, Ralph. Sorry.
I definitely pick up a calzone and eat it.
You're Ralph Hamston. So there's that.
I don't care. I don't care either way. I just know that if someone says I'm hungry for sandwiches, they don't mean hot dogs. And if they say I'm hungry for a hot dog, you wouldn't bring them a sandwich. It seems to exist as its own thing. Same as a euro, same as a taco.
Clarify. I'm going to go get hot dog sandwiches. All right.
Who says that?
All right. The next best thing from social media, LaMelo Ball. He dresses like his car. So I have a lot of questions here because I know people who do this sometimes. So if you're going to do this, right, you have to make this like a life theme for at least a few months where like you're wearing this highlighter green, like this is your thing for like a couple months. And then you can switch up your car because it may be wrapped and not painted that color. So now you can keep changing that joint, right? You can keep changing that joint. for whatever your theme color for that NBA season is.
Yeah. Thank goodness he plays in Charlotte, because Cam Newton did a whole lot of warming the city up for stuff like this.
Cam Newton's outfits got everybody prepared for this.
Yeah.
Because Southern people are like, I don't even know what's happening here.
Second of all, it's a good thing the Hornets won their opener, because that would have been a wild ass move after a loss.
Oh yeah. Well, he probably wouldn't have posted it. Now,
what does it look like he does for a living to you? Because I think he looks like the Christopher Lloyd's character from Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Like, he's trying to make dip to kill all the toons in Toontown to build a freeway.
Dude, he looks like a villain. Like, that's what he looks like. A villain in, like Batman would has to defeat him. You know, he's like an evil superhero.
Batman would whoop everyone in Charlotte's ass. I've only lived here 6 months, but, like, he'd be breaking jaws of white-collar criminals who commit bank fraud. Like, the city's very, very quiet. One Batman-style villain would bring this whole city down in 5 minutes.
All right. The next thing up is these, Ralph. Since we're staying on outfits, look at these uniforms. Oregon's gonna be playing in the Rose Bowl, dude. What, bro? Have you seen a greater college football uniform than that, bro? The nightmare green, the speckled uniforms. They are made out of sustainable materials, bro. Nobody's doing a uniform game like this, Ralph. Knocking it out the park.
I think you'd have been excited no matter what it was.
No, because I was not excited. Remember, I was not excited about the uniforms that they wore a couple weeks, like 2 weeks ago. I was like, they ended up looking better on television. But this shit right here,
oh man,
it's that death. What?
I got a few things to say about it, I suppose. Number one, in the time of COVID, when we're talking about like projectile breathing and everything, it looks like so many of the COVID graphics we've seen for why you wear a mask. It does.
Dude.
Like that picture looks like Jalen Red just got Thanos snapped and he's turning to ash.
Oh my God.
It looks like it should say eat more chicken across the bottom.
Dude, you said it like this is, like
I'm leaving.
Would do the models of the droplets.
Yeah, it looks like droplets. I am leaving this podcast today to go get a cookies and cream milkshake because this is making me crazy. It looks like somebody pointed out. It looks like the wall behind the toilet in the stall at Red Robin. Bro, I don't know. You know what? I would have liked this uniform. I'm being dead ass serious here. I would have liked this uniform if it was like that jet black uniform color with the yellow or the neon specs. So it looked like a starry night, like a stoner's bedroom.
Maybe next year, buddy.
The black and white is wild. It is straight up.
It's not black and white, dude. It's like that brownish kind of greenish chameleon kind of color. Bro, that thing is fire.
These uniforms are if Cruella DeVille succeeded. That's what these are. Like, you should have wore these against Washington to just say, like, hey, we skinned your cousins.
All right. The next best thing from social media. I'm not even sure if this should have been in cancel or consequence, because this man may deserve to be canceled for what he did here. This is Kyle. I'm going to read this to you. Kyle is 28 years old, and this was tweeted out by a Twitter from the New York Times called Telegraph Money. That is, I'm pretty sure.
There's a long history of people writing articles on how you can retire early, and all of the articles seem to have one common thread, and it exists in this thing you're about to read.
Okay, so Telegraph Money comes, it's a UK New York Times thing, because it has the New York Times symbol. Oh, But it's Telegraph, sorry, instead of New York Times. It says on their Twitter page, 20,000 followers, our aim is to inform with the best money advice and fight for readers' rights. Email us, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so now let me read to you what this thing says. And tell me what your reaction is. It has a picture of a pretty nondescript looking white guy sitting there. He looks pretty tall though. I don't know why, but anyways,
Kyle, he looks like he's a seventh year sophomore at BYU.
Yes. Kyle, 28, has already paid off his student loans, own his own home, and is prepared to retire at 40. Can you believe that, Ralph? Prepared to retire at 40. And, I lost it. Hold on.
I was prepared to retire at 20. I just didn't have the money to do it.
Yep. I was prepared to do it. Okay. Kyle, 28, has already paid off his student loans, owns his own home, and is prepared to retire at age 40. Quote, managing your spending is difficult, unquote. Requote, but if I can do it, anyone can. Learn how he did it.
And how'd he do it, George?
Kyle started saving as soon as he got his first job. Senior project manager at the hedge fund run by his father.
Senior?
He made $250,000 per year, but immediately deposited 25% into savings. To save money on housing, he lived in his grandfather's empty vacation home in Monterey for a few years to build up savings.
We all got the Monterey vacation home that's empty.
Exactly. And rather than borrow money for a mortgage on a house, he used savings and a $500,000 gift from his uncle to purchase his first home. And quote, it was tempting to spend, says Kyle about his postgraduate years. My friends would send me photos of vacations from Italy or Japan, but I just remained committed to only vacationing domestically.
Bro, who does this help?
Dude, Kyle was fine either way. If you have anybody in your life that will just give you $500,000 and give you a $250,000 job when you get out of school, dude.
You could live in a house in Monterey for free? Oh, my God. First of all, senior project manager out of
first
college.
Job.
For your
first
dad's job. Company.
First job, senior project manager. Not project manager, not junior, not assistant project manager. Senior project manager is your first job. Bro.
Imagine opening this article because you're legitimately worried about retirement, trying to think of strategies to save what you can cut out of your life here and there. And the tip is have an uncle give you $500,000, a grandfather who doesn't want to be in Monterey, and a dad who jumps you ahead of all of his other employees to give you $250,000 a year right out of college, and then have the one thing that you can actually take away from this be like, well, if you're gonna vacation, don't go to Italy yet.
Yeah, wait till after you're a multimillionaire from everybody handing you and bulldozing your way through life.
This guy is just living his life. Like, but if I see him on the street,
he thinks that that's ridiculous. Like, when you're going to do an article, you know, like my wife did an article for Yahoo Family where like they were going to profile her as a woman who went from going being broke, doing really well in life, making tons of money, all of this stuff, right? And you understand how you're going to look when you're doing this. And her road to success was like, was broke, mom in jail, all of this, like a real rags to riches story. So you know that's going to play well. But at what point in time was he looking at this and he was like, yo, we're going to kill him with this one. We're going to help people with this story. We're going to encourage people with this story.
It's who is the odd? Is it the audience is kids with free? Because I know Gary Vaynerchuk talks to these. I don't know who they are. I don't have any of them in my life. But Gary Vaynerchuk on the stuff he does, he talks to these people all the time of like, don't take money from your parents because you're going to be beholden to them. There's all these depressed people who are just generationally rich and they haven't built anything on their own. Like, is that the audience? And I'm not like, I'm definitely not dumping on whatever this publication is, because I understand building something for a niche audience. We have a Pac-12 podcast. Like, we got 30 or 40 people out there that is relevant to. This must only have 30 or 40 people. Like, I can't understand
30
who
or
the
40,
audience is.
Ralph, we do thousands of downloads per episode. You do realize that, right?
I was just assuming that there was no way that more people listen to our show than showed up to a Stanford game. But maybe they're all busy reading instead of going to the game.
Because
they're busy reading articles like this. I'm trying to save money by not driving out from Monterey, my grandfather's abandoned beach house. I hate Kyle. Kyle did nothing wrong.
And you hate Kyle because you're like,
I do.
Entitled prick.
Well, no, I just like what he just, it's like when your dog brings you a dead bird and it's like, look what I did. Like, I don't want this. I can't do anything with it. I'm not going to cook it. This does not apply. Like, I'm happy for you. This does not apply to me. Get it out of here.
Bruh. All right. Okay. Now the next thing for the best of social media. Whew. All right. This is another story that is absolutely wild. All right. Here it is. Anonymous post. Please tell me I'm not being petty because my fiance thinks I am. My daughters have been painting kindness rocks, which ironically I have in my mailbox. They had no idea where it came from. And
you have one? You have a kindness rock?
Yes.
Somebody like left it?
Yes. In my mailbox. I didn't know where it came from. It's still in my mailbox now. And hiding it in our community. They paint the most beautiful rocks with vibrant colors and gorgeous lettering and inspirational sayings. They work so hard on them. We've seen so many comments in our local group praising their artwork and commenting how much joy and happiness they felt. They look professional and people would totally pay for them if we sold them, but that's not the point. My girls are 8 and 11 and I'm trying to teach them about spreading joy and positivity. First thing is, you're teaching your daughters a bad message too. Like, yes, you need to do things for other people, but if people will buy them, like you're teaching them to be poor. But anyways,
this is why we fight. This is why we fight.
and why Aaron fights you too.
Yes.
Well, I guess someone in the hood couldn't stand. First of all, what the hell is that supposed to mean? I guess someone in the hood couldn't stand to let someone else get all the attention because all of a sudden these ratchet ass rocks barely painted are showing up all over the place. They're ugly and thrown together. Clearly some stay-at-home mom's shitty homeschool project, and saying things like hello, smile. So I took them. I went around, I banged them up, and I threw them in the bin. Like, don't try and upstage someone else's art. It's like if you hear someone playing a beautiful song on a piano and your dumbass comes in and starts singing gibberish. My fiance thinks I'm being petty and that some little kid is going to feel bad, but I don't care. Take your shit ass rock somewhere else.
Okay. Here's how we have about this.
Okay.
Would your other half agree?
Dude. Okay. He's probably right about the quality of the rocks, but then he's also probably biased thinking.
Well, this is a mom. This is gotta be a mom. It's gotta be.
Oh, this struck me as a dad. I don't know why.
You think it's a dad?
You think it's
a dad that talks that way about stay-at-home moms?
Oh,
all right.
That's a good point.
This sounds like a mom with a job who doesn't like other moms who sit at home all day.
Okay. So the question is it okay to jack the other rocks? I say no, dude. You didn't try to get the credit for it. If your daughters were getting credit for this and somebody knocked it off, okay, cool. I'm all for that. But you can't, but you're trying to spread joy in the world. And apparently somebody else saw what you did and was like, oh, I want to spread some joy too. Now you're trying to put a cap on the amount of joy that can be spread. That makes you a hater.
Would your other half agree with this?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm going to send it to her and see.
I'm thinking mine might. Therefore, I side with the rock stealer. just in case, because I'm not going to pre-disagree, because I know this is going to come up later. Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. This sounds more like a thing you complain about around the dinner table, not a thing you take action on. Stealing all the rocks and throwing them away is an incredible power move. I don't know how that's going to spread joy and happiness. Nor do I know what the economy of painted rocks are and whether or not somebody's day is made worse by more than one person getting attention for it. But I'm going to go ahead and say she's right, just because that phrase, she's right, has done me a lot of good.
Bro, I think that this is a dad and he's wrong.
Think it's a dad with two kids who's marrying somebody else?
Yes.
I think to me it was the clapping emojis.
Oh yeah. Yeah, true. That's a good telltale sign. And we know it's a white lady, right? Because she used the white hands. She didn't use the yellow hands, which makes you ethnically ambiguous. But if you use the white hands, because black people are funny about this, dude. If you're black, like, dude, there's not a fucking chance in hell that I would use white hands to send emojis. I make sure to send an appropriate colored emoji. That way you know what it is.
What if AI got so good that if you were going like full Karen in a post like that, that it you didn't have any choice but to use the white hands? Like this little quippy things. Like it sounds like you're trying to Karen. Change the color of your emoji.
Oh god, dude. And the funny part is, here's a secret and a tidbit. Black people Karen sometimes too. I know some black people who have Karen. So just saying.
I have nothing to say.
Yep. All right. Well, you guys, that is Reister or Wrong for the day. I'm George Rice. You guys enjoy your weekend. Make sure that you hit us up 818-293-7547 or shoot us an email. I'm mad@unafraidshow.com. Peace out. Catch you guys later.